going on, everybody, and welcome to a very special, very interesting breaking news moment of Below the Rim podcast. Got Ian and Michael here with me. Got Alex calling in from live from the road a little bit later, but here to talk trades. What a 48 hours. Really, well, not even 24 hours, as we've just been bombarded with the Luka Doncic news, followed by the De'Aaron Fox news that just broke here in the past 30 minutes. But let's just get into it. Michael, Ian, what were the reactions? How are we feeling?
This is franchise changing for the next decade plus. I think this might be one of the biggest trades we've ever seen in the history of the NBA. That's my initial reaction. I'm talking obviously about the Luka.
Yeah. I did some research and I'll go through some examples a little bit later, but I think I agree. It might be the biggest. We can contextualize it, but Ian, where were you? What was going through your head?
Alex and I went to the theater. We saw a stage production last night, and I got
lovely.
And I literally sat down in this chair to just kind of like, you know, get ready for Sunday. And I get the alert on my phone that said from Shams, you know, with the trade. And I called Alex immediately, and he didn't pick up, which I found extremely disappointing. But, like, I started just, like, refreshing Twitter over and over and over again to see, like, if anyone else was reporting it. Was he hacked? All this stuff. I mean, it seriously felt fake. Truly. Truly fake.
I don't think there was any world in which my first response wouldn't have been, is this real? Right? Like, I think that just kind of contextualizes the whole experience of the trade. Is at no moment was I like, yes, this is something that in the ecosystem and the basketball world that we're currently operating in, something that happened, right? It couldn't possibly be.
I can't remember the last time where we were truly blindsided by a star getting traded. I mean, there's been stars that get traded, but there's always some kind of like the player's upset, you know, Windhorse is reporting, blah, blah, blah. The father's mad. Like, who knows? There's always something.
The last moment for me that had that sort of like staying power from an NBA relevance that wasn't on the court was KD going to the Warriors. Yeah. And I'll always remember that on July 4th, I was prepping for the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Joey Chestnut over-unders, you know, really trying to dial it in. And I remember just kind of that overtaking the July 4th holiday. But I think that's probably kind of, you know, peanuts, right, compared to the trade. Well, let's quickly go through it just for, you know, those that are listening at home, right, just an overview of the trade. I have it here, so I just want to make sure I get it right. Okay, so the trade is obviously Luka Doncic, Maxi Kleber, and Markieff Morris go to the Lakers. The Mavericks get Anthony Davis, Max Christie, who I do want to kind of make sure to talk about a little bit here. And the 2029 first-round pick, and the Jazz are involved to make kind of the financials work. They take on the contract of Jalen Hood-Chifino, 2025 second-round pick from Dallas, and a 2025 second-round pick from L.A. As compensation in order to do so. So just from a basketball perspective, if we just kind of take a step back, Michael, how do you feel about it, just basketball players moving around?
The Mavericks... quite possibly, that was the stupidest shit I've ever seen in my entire life. Nico Harrison should be fired. Mark Cuban should buy the team back. Sell a little bit to me for, you know, half a Bitcoin. Either way, how do you trade a 25-year-old triple-double machine, generational, literally generational basketball player on the offensive end, about to enter his prime, took you to the finals last year? What are you doing? It doesn't make it. I'm getting amped because it makes no sense. Yeah, maybe he yells at the refs a little too much. don't we all? Maybe he could be in a little better shape. I don't care. Look at his numbers. Look at everything that he does for you on the court. And he's 25 years old. So from a basketball standpoint, the Mavericks, that was the stupid... Again, unless there's like something behind the scenes, the only thing I can think of is that he may not have wanted to sign the $345 million extension, which again, just say that out loud, doesn't make any sense. Because now his max, the max amount he can make for a five-year deal is like $117 million less on the Lakers. Again, I don't understand all the specifics, but again, it's, from a basketball standpoint, it just boggles the mind. And again, Anthony Davis going to the Mavericks where they already have Derek Lively. They already have Daniel Gafford. Sweet. Now you just have another sick-ass player down low who is really, really good, but he's 32. He's injury-prone. And he's not 25 multi-generational talent. I make it make sense to me, one of you two.
Yeah, I think you bring up almost like three things that don't make sense, and I want to unpack all three of them, right? And I think, Ian, let's just start with this. There's no way anyone can make the argument the Mavs got better at basketball. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. And Michael, they didn't get better, right? Listen, I think we can all make arguments and understand Luka's kind of shortcomings on defense, which there are some. Yes, he's missed games, but it's not like he's been a true injury liability over the years, right? Well, he's been...
Anthony Davis.
Yeah. So... I think we can just kind of table stakes it from like a basketball semblance. So let's try and parse out the other bits of information, right? And I think Michael would bring up a good point. Maybe the Mavericks know something that we didn't, right? Maybe they knew he wasn't going to re-sign a Supermax and wanted to make sure that they had perceived leverage, right, as it relates to it. Let's maybe just start there. Fundamentally, I still don't get that, right? If he was going to be – if he had that communication – I think smart organizations would say, hey, if you sign with us, you're going to make $100 million more, right, than if you sign with any other organization. Sign the contract and we'll work to trade you so we can mutually get something out of this arrangement. I guess let's just start there. What are we missing with that? Like, where is the disconnect?
The other thing, in addition, again, not that I'm a business savant, quite the opposite, but why would you deal with one team, when there's all the other teams that you can leverage and you can be like, oh, they're interested. You have the biggest bargaining chip on the face of the planet, and you go to one team and one team only. Like, I don't understand that either. It, you know what I mean? They didn't go to anybody else.
Right. Like, you don't think, okay, let's just say on its premise, on its face, that they don't want to commit the next 5+ years to Luka, all their cap space, even though the cap increases pretty frequently at this point. Let's just say they don't want to do that. I think that's a separate conversation. There are so many better players for the long term than Anthony Davis you can get in return. Like, let's say you want a star player that can help you compete now. We really like Kyrie. We like Derek Lively. We like Gafford. We like all these pieces. That's fine. I mean, it's fine. You can't go out and try to get, I don't know. I'll just throw like a few names out there who like maybe you could try to get. Jaren Jackson Jr., Devin Booker, Anthony Edwards. Like, you can't just try to get one of those guys. I don't know if those teams give up their players for Luka.
Come like the Mavericks, you mean, Ian?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, just making sure.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if teams go for that, but like, I don't know how you just decide that Anthony Davis is bringing you to the promised land. It's, yeah. It's not to mention, the GM talked about how you have to be a defensive-minded franchise. Okay. The team made the finals last year, and they're better this year. Like, their defense was solid. You build around Luka. You think he's a defensive liability? Fine, I'm not going to argue with you, but you can't build around him to make them have defensive strengths elsewhere. It's just unbelievable.
Well, and I would also say lost a team in the finals that was, like, pretty, like, universally agreed upon to be the best team all year. Right, we have a lot of finals or like finals winners that you look back and there's something fluky that happened with injuries or something that just resulted in like a path that, like, even if we look to, you know, like the Warriors 2022 run or 2021 run, right? Like, they didn't really have anybody at full strength, right? And yes, it's a great win and title for Steph, but if you look at just like the talent on that team versus the talent that Luka single-handedly dragged that team through to make a finals run, there's only four guys in the league that can do that. And those four guys don't ever come up, right? So to your point, you also got to have guys that put the ball in the basket, right? I don't put any stock in what Nico Harris said in terms of the public perception of the trade. Like, to me, that is the biggest
shot. Like, no, it's Kyrie. That's it. He's the only guy who can create their own shot.
Yeah. I sure you got PJ Washington stepping into a bigger role, but like I've moved past and like, I'm not, I think there's always going to be people that try and like take a, you know, a contra action or perspective against like the norm here. I don't even think it's worth arguing that it's a better, even remotely comparable basketball kind of operation on the floor. They have gotten meaningfully worse today than they were yesterday.
Alex, welcome. Good to see you. A quick summary, just in case you were, I know you missed the first 11 minutes, but quick summary is that we think the Mavericks might be the worst handled basketball team, GM, everywhere. They're awful. That was the worst move I've ever seen in my career as a human.
I still don't know what happened. Did they make a trade? This is all news to me.
It's the rumor on the street.
Didn't Shams' Twitter get hacked?
You know, that's really what it still feels like. Maybe this is just like a big April Fool's joke. Social experiment to see what's what.
Well, I want to see one of them suit up. Who's going to be the first to suit up? Probably AD, but it's hard to say, right?
Yeah, I think AD is supposed to play later this week. I a little bit contrary to what you were saying at the end there, Jacob, I don't hate it that much for the Mavs. I know it's like impossible to get back equal value for a guy like Luka, but in the short term, the Lakers become the worst defensive team in the NBA, if not close. And in the short term for the Mavs, like, Anthony Davis is incredible. He's still a top 10 player. I know Luka's like long term as good as it gets, but I like the AD, Kyrie, and then you combine AD with Gafford or Lively, Clay on the wing. Like, there, that's a team that can compete out west.
They have to win the championship the next 2 years for this to be any sort of, oh, maybe that wasn't so bad.
But I would imagine management for the Mavericks is looking at it like, you're right, like as in a 2 year window, but they were going to lose Luka. They're probably thinking of it like, when his contract's up, we weren't going to have him either way, right?
I mean,
yeah, but do you know who gives you a good chance of winning the NBA championship? Luka fucking Doncic, right? Like, I hear you. But if you like want to just like sliding doors it, like, there's no situation that you have a worse chance to lose, to win the championship with Luka on your roster than you don't. Especially when, like, Nico Harrison has been given a lot of kudos, appropriately so, over the past 18, 24 months of being able to work around the edges to build a team specifically built to play with Luka Doncic, right? So, like, in a vacuum, like, I see, like, a semblance of a sliver of argument of, maybe for a certain type of matchup in the playoffs, right? You remove a defensive liability, you have stoppers everywhere, and you only have one guy you can switch and target in Kyrie. But like, I 10 times out of 10, I'm taking the team that has one of two players in the entire world that you actually cannot stop when they want to get to their spot. That's just like, I struggle with that. Like, and the piece that I also struggle with, and this is my point, is like, if you decided you're going to trade them, it was malpractice, Michael, to the point that you said in terms of the way they went about it. Just call Shams, call Windhorse, call somebody. Be like, hey, guys, we want to trade Luka. This is real. And just let the phone ring for 72 hours, right?
That's a good point.
Yep. Right? Like, that's my... Yeah, exactly. Make somebody bid for this shit, right? Like, I just don't understand how nobody could find out about it.
Also, like, the Lakers have another first-round pick that they didn't have to give up, which makes me think that they're definitely not done. Like, they're going to make another move or two this week. And, you know, to your point, they're the worst defensive team in the league, probably, and they're gonna try to make some moves around the edges to fix that. From a long-term perspective, though, the Lakers just, like, struggled. Like, they didn't have to leverage that much of their future to potentially, like, fill out the cornerstone of their franchise for the next decade. Which is crazy.
I had to just look it up. That's just 2023 to 2024 Luka Doncic stats. 34 points a game, 9.8 assists a game, and 9.2 rebounds a game. I don't think I'm ever giving that up unless you're building me a new stadium along with three other players that I'm getting. And again, from a basketball test, I know they're the detractors. He's ball dominant. It's hard to play. You got to play around him. But like when you're that good, I don't mind that you're ball dominant. I mean, again, look at James Harden. He was super good, and Luka's about 100 times better than him. And he makes other guys better. I just, again, if I watch that press conference and I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan, I'm just like getting slapped in the face throughout by Nico Harrison. It's just like, apparently, I don't know. This is all social media, so I don't know what's true or not. But no one knew about it other than Rob Pelinka. And Nico Harrison, like Jason Kidd didn't know. LeBron.
They didn't want anyone else to know because if someone else found out about this, I mean, it might not happen the way that it did.
Yeah, that's irresponsible to me as a GM.
So I wanted to figure out if I could wrap my head around it in terms of like contextualizing it if something similar has ever happened in NBA history in terms of a trade. Post 1980, which I kind of pseudo consider modern NBA basketball, this is only the fifth time somebody was first team all NBA the prior year and then was traded the subsequent year, either before the season or in the season. The other four examples, 2004 Shaq from LA to Miami. And that was a slightly diminished Shaq, and as well as kind of Kobe just saying, They chose a better player, right, in Kobe than they did Shaq at that point in time. So it was understandable. The Lakers got back Lamar Odom, Caron Butler, who was good, a 2006 first and 2007 second, right? So their hand was a little bit forced in terms of that regard, and obviously ended up working out for the Heat more so immediately, but the Lakers were able to retool, et cetera, probably a win-win in retrospect, right? So that was probably the only one that I saw where the team that moved the asset was the one that ended up becoming equally in terms of the return. Next one, 2012, also with the Lakers, ironically, Dwight to the Lakers. And this is the package that the Magic got. Aaron Aflalo, Al Harrington, Maurice Harkless, Nikola Vucevic, Josh McRoberts, Christian Onega, who I didn't know, a 2013 second-round pick, a 2014 first-round pick, a conditional 2015 first-round pick, and a conditional 2015 second-round pick. So just, like, the amount of things in there that the Magic got back for getting off of Dwight. And even with all of those assets, that was in 2012. This is the first year the Magic are relevant since. So it took over 13 years to move on.
Okay, here's another stat. Mikal Bridges was traded for 6 first-round picks recently.
Yeah. I mean, the other two in here, Paul George to the Clippers, set up the Thunder for the next 2 decades, including SGA, Danilo, and 6 first-round picks. And James Harden of Brooklyn, which was 3 firsts and 4 swaps. That set the... So just contextually with what those, like, if you just compare the packages, yes, none of those players had Anthony Davis in it. And yes, you could say that Anthony Davis in and of himself, but if you're not willing to play Luka Doncic, then you should be planning for the future, right? Like you do all those things so you can get Luka Doncic. You don't, like, that's the goal. That's the prize out of it. just doesn't make any sense.
And it's so bothersome that... Sorry, Alex, you go.
Well, I was just going to say, I agree with all the points you guys are making on the return not being enough. Like, all those examples you just gave Jacob are better returns. And the point about it being an open bid, just get the best return.
Yeah.
I'm good with all that. But what are your guys' thoughts in general on trading, like the decision to trade Luka? I mean, they know more than we do behind the scenes, but when you brought up James Harden, Mike, I'm thinking like very similar, like I agree Luka's better, very similar numbers though, very ball dominant players. And you know, the rumors you're hearing are that Luka's out of shape and doesn't have as good of a work ethic as they want. So I'm not totally against them getting ahead of it and understanding like this might not be a winning player for us. We don't like his work ethic. Let's get off of his deal before we max him out and get some return on it. So I'm not against the decision to get rid of him, but agree that the return wasn't enough.
If we accept that as a premise, then that's fine. But yeah, you can't just accept the one offer. Like you got to shop it. You got to shop it. You got to create a bidding war. You got to maximize the value.
And also, he did literally just take him to the championship last year. And again, his numbers are ridiculous. And I don't know, I find that if you have a top five guy in the league, you do everything and anything in your power to keep him. Just no matter what the situation is. Like, even if maybe he's going to be a little hard, he's not perfect superstar. Like, again, maybe he's a little out of shape. Maybe he doesn't work as hard as you want him to. Maybe he yells at the refs. But all those things, yeah, I'll take it for 34, 9, and 9. You know what I mean?
So I was watching it.
In Dallas, and if you're a Mavericks fan, how fast are you trying to get to the top to jump off of it?
I saw something like they lost over 700,000 Instagram followers in like 6 hours since the start of it. If I put on my like, let's go to the extreme conspiracy hat, I was watching a documentary on Nikola Mirotic the other week. Obviously like a little bit different, but like sort of a comparable career trajectory in terms of like success in Spain and coming over. Obviously he was never somebody of Luka's standard, right? But he did have a season that he was like an alternate onto the All-Star team. So like he was successful, and he left in like the dead of night because he hated America. It was like effectively his thing. He's like, I just want to go live in Spain and play basketball and be around my family and be religious and enjoy life. It's like, maybe Luka's just going to leave, right? Like, that's the type of thing that I'm at. That's the thing that the Mavericks knew. Like, he didn't want to play basketball in America anymore. It's not a calf, it's an Achilles, and he can't play basketball the rest of this year. Like, I'm expecting there to be some sort of, like, truly fundamental piece of information that we don't understand that will be like, oh, we get it. Because the pieces as, like, you can watch Nico Collins's press conference. Fucker doesn't even believe what he's saying, right, as it relates to it. So the investigative kind of juices in me are like, there's something else that is there that is not just Luka doesn't like to stay in shape. Like, there's like, he's not going to be here in 2 years. Like, that's the magnitude that I'm thinking about here.
Are you implying with the Mirotić analogy that maybe like Jaden Hardy knocked him the fuck out in practice?
It was a big yeah. He served the Bobby Portis role in this scenario.
That's wild that they made a documentary about Nico Mirotić.
Yeah, it was like a 15-minute like YouTube docu-series. It wasn't like a full feature film, but very insightful stuff. Say,
wasn't on Netflix, Jacob. There's no way.
No, didn't make it to the big time. Well, listen, I think the other obviously big news, three-team trade happened tonight. And I think it's also very informative to contextualize the Luka deal in comparison to what just happened with the Kings, Bulls, and Spurs, of course. So trade, Spurs, centerpiece of the trade is De'Aaron Fox. They get De'Aaron Fox and Jordan McLaughlin. The Kings receive Zach LaVine, Sydney Cissoko, 3 first round picks, which are the 2025 Charlotte first, which I believe is protected 1 through 12 and would then convert into 2 seconds. The 2027 Sacramento first, which most likely is not a super desirable asset, and the 2031 Minnesota first, and then 3 second round picks. Bulls get back Zach Collins, Trey Jones, Kevin Herter, and their own 2025 pick. So on its surface, I don't think it makes the Luka deal look like worse contextually. I think there's other examples that we've pointed out that make a lot worse. But does this deal happening when it happened and how it went down make you feel better, worse, the same about the Luka deal? If we just think about it contextually, and then we could just kind of identify this one on its own afterwards.
Honestly, my first gut reaction comparing, or just like overall assessing these trades, is my concern over Michael's first podcast bold prediction of the Mavericks getting out of the second round. I feel like it's at risk now. We got to reassess.
And now maybe it is a bold take. It's a hot take.
You were way ahead of it.
Alex, thank you. I'm actually okay with that. I was more prepared than you guys ever thought I would.
Yeah, I mean, as I was going through my research for the takeies, which I haven't had an opportunity to do, we've punted that, but it's still on the agenda. That was definitely top nominee for worst following of a prompt. But you know, that's all right. You know, we all make mistakes.
I literally told you it was a mistake. I read the Slack wrong. I admitted it. So
worth the trophy. Wait,
What else?
It's worth the award. Jacob's going to give you an award for it. Yeah.
It was a terrible take, but now it's a great take. Jacob, so you're saying, like, are these teams better comparative?
I guess, how do you think about how these teams are, like, comparing value, right? Because obviously, I would say, like, getting Zach LaVine as well as 3 firsts, we can debate the quality of those firsts back for De'Aaron Fox. Comparatively, and Zach's had a great year, right? Like, to me, that demonstrates the ability for the Kings to extract value out of De'Aaron Fox was superior than the Mavericks were, if you just contextualize, compare De'Aaron Fox to Luka Doncic, right? So I think just like my measuring of how the trades went down, I would give a better, I would say for the Kings, who had a distressed asset that people knew wanted to move, I would give them a higher grade on the ability to kind of still position that asset in a way to get a return that I would the Mavs, right, in terms of what they got back for Luka.
Oh, I think the Mavs get an F, and I think these guys get, whether you want to call it a C, a B, whatever, the Mavs get an F. They're the worst in all of this scenario, in my opinion. You guys can kind of tell how I feel about the whole that trade. I do find
it. Mox is a hero, and he's fat shaming. No big boys on the team.
I'm fat shaming?
Oh, Alex is.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say. And I will say, I do find it interesting, though, that Zach is going to get to be on DeMar's team instead of Vooch. Now it's Sabonis. Pretty similar. Except Sabonis is much better than Vooch. So we'll see how the Kings do. I actually think, what do you guys think? Who do you think got better? Obviously the Bulls got worse, but the fact that they made a trade is an A+. I give them an A+ for doing something.
For doing something. We set a low bar for them.
That's the bar. They A+, they did something. I think the Kings did pretty solid. I think the Spurs, I was looking at the potential lineup. What is it? Chris Paul, De'Aaron Fox, Vassell, I forgot the 4, and Wemby. That's a solid starting 5.
Yeah, they're going to be fun in the playoffs. They got a lot better.
I think Fox is like one of the most exciting guys you can put with Wemby. Like, I think that's an awesome point guard center combo. They're going to be really exciting. Obviously, that's like a very forward looking move. You could argue that the Lakers move was like pretty forward looking. The Kings were pretty forward looking. Ironically, the team that gave up the best asset is the team that's like, we want to win now in Dallas. It's absurd. I mean, it's just like, to Michael's point, it's like they're the only team coming out and being like, this is a move that we made to help us win tomorrow. and they got rid of the best player that's ever been moved at the deadline. It's like, it's just nonsense.
And it bothers me that why did the rich keep getting richer? The Lakers have had such all-stars for decades and decades and decades. And just, this is super telling. I saw on Instagram, again, very valid, you know, Wikipedia level source, my career in NBA 2025. If you look at the every state and all the teams that everybody picks, everywhere is the Lakers, except Chicago is the Bulls, Milwaukee is the Bucks, but like 37 states basically will choose the Lakers. I'm like, why do they have to keep getting the best player? It's really annoying. And they're going to be good for the next 10 years.
All right, let me ask you this. Do you guys think that these trades, these two trades, I mean, the Eastern Conference basically hasn't changed at all. Maybe the Bulls hopefully fall out of the play-in. I think that's the plan. They're probably headed that way anyway. But in the West, do we think that the Lakers, Dallas, the Spurs, or the Kings drastically improve or lose their playoff standing? And if so, you think that they can like really make a run deep into the playoffs? Like, is anyone beating OKC?
I don't know about beating OKC, but I think the Spurs become like a legit playoff team now. Like, I think they went from play-in, frisky play-in to, I would not be surprised if they got out of the first round at this point with this team.
I mean, they're 5.5 games out of the sixth seed. There's enough basketball left for them to make a jump up there. But you have to imagine that Minnesota, Phoenix, obviously the super hard competing Dallas Mavericks, are going to be balling out because they have like nothing to lose for. So it'll be tough. And they have to pass up the Warriors too, who like really have to make the playoffs. Otherwise their season's a total waste. So,
but like, I could see a scenario where they are in the play and get the 7th seed and beat Houston. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. Yeah, I could see it. I would have a hard time believing they can get to the 6th seed, but I could definitely see them winning in the play. They have a lot of speed to jump.
I think it impacts everybody that isn't the Thunder. Right, like if I'm the Rockets or I'm the Grizzlies or even like the Clippers, any of these teams that are going to be in like the 2, 3, 4, 5 range, all of a sudden now there's like three teams that you just really don't want to run into in the first round of the playoffs. Like, I don't think any of those teams in their current construction next year will actually. I still think the Thunder and the Nuggets stand alone up top because, like, I don't want to run into a team that has Luka Doncic on in the first round of the playoffs, indifferent of how little defense that they could play, right? And then I do think there is and Alex, I think this is your point, right? Like, I think there's enough of an infrastructure of a team that knows how to win in the playoffs in Dallas that I would probably take this Dallas roster over Houston. I would probably consider picking them over the Grizzlies. I would definitely take them over the Clippers, right, in a first round series. Their ceiling's capped, right? Like, I'm now not picking them to advance, but there's still enough there. So I just think it muddles the West. I think it takes a team that was like a true title contender and now disparate, you know, spreads it amongst others.
I actually, and Alex is gonna love that I'm saying this, but I actually feel like Dallas is built to match up with Jokic now. Like, they're a really tough matchup for Denver. I still think the Thunder would cook them, but I think the Thunder is probably the best team in the West. And but yeah, I mean they could throw a lot at Jokic, which is pretty interesting to me.
I think the West this year is, like, in a weird way, really much going to depend on who plays who. There's so many matchups that are very, like, there are a couple, like, if the Nuggets play the Thunder, I'm taking the Nuggets. Like, Jokic is going to just single-handedly eat their lunch in a 7-game series. But other than them, and honestly, like, if I'm the Thunder, I don't want to play the Timberwolves as well. Like, there's, like, a couple of teams that just, like, fundamentally, in terms of the way that they match up, don't make a lot of sense. I think the interesting one, the really, really interesting one, is going to be the Spurs. And I think there's a real chance that it just doesn't go great this year. That's one where for Wemby and Fox to really get to a point where they're clicking, that they put it together enough to put them in a position that they're not have to win two play-in games, it's going to take a big kind of upgrade and effort. And I just wonder if that is a next year kind of – this is an accelerator, and that's the next year team that's going to make the leap. But for the rest of the West, I think it just kind of it just turns things on its head. It's just like, all right, like, good luck, everybody. Let's shake this thing up and see where everybody lands.
I do agree with you, Jacob, about the matchups. Like, what was the – didn't Minnesota – did they beat the Nuggets last year? Is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a perfect matchup for them. And then, obviously, you know, Luka did what he did. But you're right. Matchups really make a difference, like team matchups, not player matchups, obviously.
Right. And
I also, if I'm just looking at the potential starting five of the Kings on paper and in a video game, they're amazing. In real life, I don't know.
I went through that exercise a little bit as well. Did the Kings get – like, Zach's been really, really good this year. And I would say he's probably on the same tier of defender when he actually commits to it as De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox probably a little bit better laterally, but Zach's bigger, right, in terms of, like, versatility of the types of players that he can guard. And, like, in terms of, like, fourth quarter bucket getter, he's probably on par with De'Aaron Fox. Obviously, De'Aaron's a little bit better at getting to the hole and initiating offense. If you're the Kings, like, I don't know. You give Keon Ellis a bigger role, right? You kind of you bring on him from a point guard versatility. You play with some of the matchups as it relates to the Monk, LaVine, DeRozan kind of combos of you know, ramping those minutes up and down. And you kind of hope that the trajectory, right, that Keegan Murray was on, he can start to kind of get back on that with a little bit more usage and De'Aaron Fox getting off. I don't know if I hate that roster, right? I don't know if the upside's there, but like, I don't know if they got meaningfully worse this year and they got all those assets for somebody who was definitely going to leave.
Yeah, they got a lot of picks. And again, like a Monk, LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Keegan Murray, and Domantas Sabonis. I mean, again, I want to really like it. I just have to see it in action. They're kind of like proved to me. Like,
what a cordial situation that was. De'Aaron Fox says he'd like to potentially be traded specifically to the Spurs, but also says, I'm going to play hard with the Kings. And then they trade him exactly where he wants to go, and everyone's happy. Beautiful.
We don't have any situation right now in the league that would suggest an alternate route.
Not Jimmy Butler coming out and saying he's unwilling to sign an extension with the Warriors, and now the trade talks between them have ceased.
I was going to bring that up. It's like, what does he want exactly? I don't think he has any idea. I don't think he has a single clue what he wants.
I think he wants to go to the Suns. Like, I think that's what he wants, and like the math just doesn't work. And I don't think players understand that it's not the NBA of 2021 anymore, where you could just say, I want to go to this destination. Like, there's like legitimate restrictions on being able to do that. And they can't trade for him if Bradley Beal isn't in the deal. And Bradley Beal has a no trade clause. So it's like, I think it's like just these GMs banging their heads against the wall, being like, dude, we can't fucking do this. And
who would want to take on Bradley Beal?
Well, I also love that. I kind of respect that Bradley Beal's like, I'm pretty happy here. Like, I don't mind coming off the bench. Like, Phoenix is great for my wife and children. Like, I kind of respect it.
Yeah,
he's making an ungodly amount of money to just, like, hang out in the sun. That's the dream.
Do you guys think because of that, no trade clauses will be either eliminated or people are going to be like, unless I'm getting a Luka Doncic, you can get a no trades clause, but no one else can't. Like, I don't understand a no trade clause. It just look at what's happening. It's handcuffing.
Yeah. I read a bunch of like smart people at the time that were at like when it happened. They're like, what are they doing? Why does Bradley Beal get a no trade clause? Like, this just doesn't make any sense. but you know, I think as one of my favorite podcasters likes to say, it was just like classic new owner syndrome, right? Just come in and be like, "Oh, we'll do it. Anything that we have to do in order to get it done." That deal is just an absolute abomination for the Suns.
What do we think happens next? Like, if you had an idea, I think I'm trying to think like through the Jimmy Butler thing. Like, the only two teams that I can see that are like haven't been ruled out completely are the Grizzlies and the Rockets, and I just can't see either of those teams who have been just so smart with young players in the last 5 years. Not 5 years necessarily. Well, Grizzlies 5 years, Rockets last like 2 years. They've been so smart. I just can't see them panicking into a trade for Jimmy Butler. They're like teams that are overperforming. They have a really bright future. I just like don't really see them panicking into it. One guy that I would like to see moved is Cam Johnson, who obviously has been talked about a lot. But I almost feel like he would fit really well on this new Mavericks powerhouse team. Like, I feel like he actually would be pretty exciting as like a big wing with like, you can put AD at the four, Cam Johnson at the three, and then have like Lively or Gafford at the five and just be like super duper long. I don't know. I think that'd be kind of exciting, but
that's a good fit. Have you guys properly praised how good Anthony Davis is at basketball yet?
Honestly, not really.
Okay. Nah. I just want to cover that. It is a bad trade, but he's a top, like a clear top 10 player. He's had an incredible year.
He's excellent.
Top seven. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
There's no disrespect about to Anthony Davis. Let me be clear about that. I'm just talking the next 5-10 years. Who would you rather have? And just based on age and common sense, I'm going to go with Luka. But again, 100%. AD is amazing. And that has nothing to do with, like, if they were at their primes at the same time, like if he was 25 and he was 25, you know, I could see an argument for either based on what you need and the makeup of your team. But again, I feel like there's not as, it's more rare to have Luka's offensive capabilities than AD's, even though he's amazing. Like you can have really big athletic guys that can be rim protectors and can, you know, score upper 20s, whatever, because they're so athletic. But what Luka does is so unique that, you know what I mean? He can take charge of a game, and there's not that many guys who can do that in the history of the game.
Yeah, he's a magician. I'm wondering what it's going to look like him and LeBron on the court together. That's going to be really weird.
So in terms of what happens next, I wonder, I really do wonder if there is a Lakers, Golden State, LeBron for like Wiggins plus Kuminga plus Pods and some picks. And the Warriors just say, "We're doing it. Steph and LeBron, let's ride off into the sunset." LeBron waves the no trade clause, and we just see what happens. I think, like, for all, like, that's my NBA fandom dream, is to see that and just like have Steph and LeBron say, "Young guys versus the old guys. Let's see if we have one last gasp." I think it actually would make a lot of sense, to be honest with you, from like the Lakers resetting their timeline and pairing some assets, the Warriors acknowledging that they like don't really have assets, and LeBron is not like a top 10 trade target anymore, and they could go get him. So in terms of what happens next, I think that would be my dream scenario. Of course, Bronny would be going with to Golden State. I just want to be clear.
Yeah,
but I think it would be a dream come true for the players, the teams, Adam Silver, the ratings, the partners. Just like, just give us that. Let's figure out a way to make it happen.
The only thing that you would have to also assume is that Mike Dunleavy would have to retire in 2 years from his GM role then, because they would be, once they'd go, those two guys retire, the Warriors would be in purgatory for the next long time.
Would they, though? Because it'd be a pretty easy bottom out, right? Like, I'd rather be really bad for 3 years and go through a full reset after. Like, when Steph retires, they're going to be bad no matter what. And they're kind of stuck in that middle right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you think go balls out before that happens?
So So if Jacob's dream scenario doesn't happen, one thing I was thinking about earlier, who is Anthony Davis the best player that LeBron's ever had with him? Is he the best two that LeBron had in his whole career? It's no. Wade. It's Wade.
Wade then AD. Yeah.
Ooh.
Wade then AD then Kyrie.
Yeah.
Kevin Love is four.
Who'd you say?
Who's four?
Kevin Love, the four.
I think. I was gonna say Prime Bosh, and then Caleb.
Oh yeah, I forget. Yes, correct. Correct.
I feel like you could make an argument that AD was better in the finals that he won with LeBron than Wade was in those finals with Bron.
Not in 2010. In the ones they won, I agree. Wade was still a top five player.
In the two that he won in Miami, I feel like LeBron was clearly the alpha, and I feel like in 2020, AD and Bron were like on the same level, I thought.
Yeah, it was also in a bubble in the weirdest championship ever, and who they were playing against wasn't like, I think I agree, but I just think the level that Wade was at, even though like that was peak of powers LeBron, right? Like 2011-12, LeBron was the best version of LeBron. He was incredible. And like he's second best player ever, right? At those times. So yeah, Wade wasn't there, but I think if you look at like Wade's performance in 2010 and for the most part of 2011, he was still a kind of could be an MVP type candidate. And I just don't think AD was ever at that level.
I think there's a good argument for it. It's hard to compare those two players because
they're so different.
They're so different. And the main positive that AD's adding is on the defensive end. In those years, I thought he was the best defensive player in basketball. And I still think he's, like after Wemby, I still think he's next up.
The one other scenario that I think for Jimmy that we didn't touch on that I think would be really interesting, I wonder if there's a Bucks Heat plus a third party that the Bucks could upgrade the Middleton spot with Jimmy and move off of Middleton and somebody like one of their young guys like an Andre Jackson plus a couple picks. And dump that in a Portland or a Brooklyn and do some salary matching to make that happen. I think that would be really interesting for Jimmy to go to an Eastern Conference team to maybe elevate kind of one other competitor. I wouldn't want it to be Orlando. I don't think that's a fit, but I do think it would be a fit in Milwaukee just to upgrade that role. And just go into battle with Dame, Jimmy and Giannis. To compete with the rest of the Eastern Conference.
I like that trio. It's funny the price for Jimmy's got to be. I would be curious to hear what people are talking about because it's got to be way down with the way he's behaving. Like when you were talking about the Grizzlies, like they're so smart with their young players, like you said, but it probably wouldn't take much to just take a flyer on Jimmy. Like one young guy, a pick, and some salary.
Yeah, he's really tanking his stock. Because everyone was like, oh, it's Jimmy being Jimmy. But now three teams. And this one, I think, is the worst. Because he's going up against a guy who's not going to back down in Pat Riley. So he's like, be a child. We're going to suspend you then. You know? And he's not going to make a bad move. Riley isn't, you know? So I'm a little disappointed in Jimmy, to be honest. I'll still buy his coffee. Don't get me wrong. But I'm a little disappointed in Jay.
That's all he wants.
Yeah.
Do you think if you were – and listen, I think the fun thing is that now that these trades are happening, like we can like make up any of the realistic trades we want to, and they're like actually on the table, right? I think this whole notion of trades don't happen, we've kind of just moved past that. So I think we're operating in a really new, cool space where like – shit, anything's possible. If you were the Rockets and the Heat kind of came to you and said, all right, you can take Amen Thompson, Jabari, and Jalen Green off the table, right? we want to have a conversation. We'll take the Fred VanVleet salary, right? We'll take the Dylan Brooks salary to make it match. And we just want one of Reed Sheppard or Tari Eason. If you're the Rockets, are you doing that? Or Cam Whitmore? Just give us one of those three plus the two guys to match salary.
I don't think they win with Jimmy. So I'm not, personally. I don't know what Alex and Ian think.
I would say no to it as well.
Wow.
Because there's also, Jimmy's great when he's healthy, but he doesn't play basketball that often. So the value's not that high. He's got to play basketball.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a hard one for me, right? If you don't have to move any of your top seven rotation guys, right? Maybe you take Tari Eason off of it, right? Maybe you can kind of, I mean, we can all argue of how high we are on, you know, Cam Whitmore or Reed Sheppard at this point anymore. I think Reed Sheppard's probably the guy you wouldn't want to move, but if it was a couple salaries and Cam Whitmore, right? For me at that point, what, worst case scenario, then I have him for a year and then he walks. I was going to have to probably fill the spots of Fran VanVleet and Dylan Brooks with younger guys to make my ability to pay my other guys more, and then I could build around him then in the future. I don't know what the downside is at that point, if that's kind of the move, especially with a strong coach in Udoka to carry the water for a lot of that.
I think my hesitation would not be moving off those young guys that you mentioned. It's that I would want to wait and see how the playoffs go and then just wait for next trade deadline to get someone more valuable than Jimmy and send those young guys for him.
Is Jimmy 35?
Yeah, he's an old man.
Wow. What do you think? He's got three more years and it'll keep going down in productivity and availability.
It's hard to say.
I keep looking at my phone, like, what's the next thing that's going to happen?
I'm really excited for the first Lakers-Mavs game that Luka plays in, because he loves shit-talking. Yeah. So, him putting up 50 on the Mavericks after they trade him is going to be...
He's going to put up 50, 25, and 20. Mm-hmm. And then maybe he's going to have, four blocks and five steals just to be like, I can play deep. That'll be fun to watch. I will say that. No, I'm sorry, Jacob. This is the least sexy part of the conversation. But what do we think about the Bulls getting Zach Collins, Trey Jones, and Kevin Huerter? I know we give them an A+ because they did something. I don't hate these guys. I like Zach Collins. They're all kind of young. Trey Jones is we have a million guards, so I don't know why we need another guard. But he's just was part of the deal, and I like Kevin Huerter. I think this actually gives us some good pieces that maybe in 7 years we're going to be one day okay. I don't know how you guys feel about this.
They have to go all in now on tanking. Like they can get rid of Vucevic this week. Otherwise, it's really a waste, I think.
It just happens that there are three players that I just cannot stand. I really hate Trey Jones. I think he is at best, backup point guard on an average team, right? Like he's not his brother. His brother is, far superior of a basketball player. I would have loved Kevin Huerter 5 years ago, right? But now he can't make a three-pointer, which is problematic for a guy whose best trait is to be a shooter. And, Zach Collins, theoretically, sure. If he ever stayed healthy for a stretch of time that was extended. There's still theoretical upside there. I think the part that I struggle with the most is I think if this was what we got back for Zach last year, I would have been great, we're off the contract. Let's move on. I think it's an appropriate return. I just think maybe I had as a homer, right, reevaluated my own perspective of how much Zach had in terms of value as a basketball player. And I thought you would have been able to get, at least Jeremy Sochan back with that pick, right? That's kind of where I get to it is, I would have much rather kind of been able to, obviously you have to match salaries, but maybe Sochan. In my dream scenario, sure, Steven Vassell, but that never would have happened. But I think that would have, in my head, been where the value fit. It's just, it feels a little bit lacking for a guy that is still has upside to go get buckets, more so than, you know, most guys in the league.
Well, I do feel good as a team that never makes any moves in free agency. We do have, I mean, like, Trey Jones is expiring this year. Collins and Herter will be expiring next year. So, I mean, they free up a lot of space. I look forward to them signing someone completely uninspiring with that space. I'm scared to look at who the unrestricted free agents are this year because I just like whatever player I don't like the most is who they're going to sign.
This is so sad. We're just giving the Bulls a participation trophy at this point.
No, but I think you're right, Ian. It makes if you can get off Vucevic as well, right, and like really refresh your books at this point, wash your hands and say, I mean, you have Giddy on a pretty good team-friendly deal, right? Like, you continue to see if you can extract any value there for the short term. You'll let Io play up to his contract value. You put the ball in the hands of Lonzo as well and see if you have anything. Like, well, it could be fun in the short term, and then...
They're for sure re-signing Lonzo, or they're going to try to.
Yeah.
Which honestly, I'm fine with it. As long as it's, like, a reasonable deal, he's still got a lot of potential.
He does. But, Lieb, you are severely underestimating Io. He is such a team-friendly deal. That dude should be making so much more money.
No, I mean, he does a lot of really good things on the court, but he also just is fundamentally limited in terms of his upside. So, he's one of my favorite players. Like, I love him as a U of I guy. Just if he was a 40% three-point shooter, he'd be phenomenal. But the fact that he shoots 31-ish percent from three and their open corner looks just not as good.
That's cool. I mean, I want the Bulls to just commit to being like a bottom 3 to 5 team next year.
The issue is they can't get that low this year.
No, they can't. They can't. It's too late.
Mike, if you, there's one NBA guy you could just grab a cup of coffee with, is it Io, or is that too close to home? He's like a son to you. You want something different, or
no? It's Io because he's like it's 45 minutes from my house, so that also helps. And I'm busy. You know what I mean? But yes, Io for sure. He seems like a great kid. I get a lot, and yeah, he's definitely like a son that I look up to physically and also basketball standpoint. So.
Any other thoughts on this? Things that we didn't touch on? You know, I think we're all still kind of processing it. I'm really interested to see what the rest of the trade deadline plays out. I wonder if there's kind of, more smoke and more fire to come. But, I think, Alex, you're probably the highest on it in terms of this year's upside, maybe this year and next year's upside. But I think it's going to be obviously a, pivotal moment in the NBA for the next 10, 15, 20 years to come. Going to really kind of shake up the landscape of everything that's in front of us.
Exciting stuff.
Well, I think they say, hindsight is 2020. I think right now is 2020. I'm seeing this is a really bad move. I don't even need hindsight for this.
Yeah, let's maybe wrap it up that way. Michael, give us, why don't we go around the horn? Give us the prediction, maybe 1-3-5 year time horizon, right? What do you think is going to be the repercussions of these trades?
Luka's going to win a championship with the Lakers. I don't know. I can't say if LeBron's going to be there or not, because I could see him getting traded or just retiring because he's 40. The Mavericks, Nico Harrison gets fired and has to leave the country. Because you know what they do, in Texas, they're a little angry about their sports, which in this case makes total sense. And the Jazz, I don't know, I don't care if that's fair. They just the Spurs will be, they'll win. I don't know if they'll. This is tough. I want to say they may get to a conference finals and maybe a finals. I don't know if they're going to win one in the next. Before Chris Paul retires, and Alex knows how I feel about Chris Paul. I hope he doesn't win a championship in his career. No, I don't wish evil upon people. I just don't like Chris Paul. And then the Kings are just going to be, they'll be the 4 seed for the next 5 years. and the Bulls will suck for the next. If they win a championship before I die, that's a win.
Hard to argue with that.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at.
Al, 1-3-5-year time horizon. What are your primary thoughts and predictions?
Honestly, I think most of it is irrelevant championship wise. Besides what the Spurs are doing, my mind's really like when all this madness is happening. My mind's with Woj, and I'm thinking about him in a bubble bath, listening to like classical music, just not caring about what's going on right now, and that's beautiful.
It is. I respect that take.
That's a great take, Alex.
I think that the 1-3-year outlook, I kind of think the Mavs are in around the same place as they are with Luka, which is maybe contrary to how it sounded throughout this episode. It's just the long term. The 5-10-year outlook is just so embarrassingly bad. Yeah, I mean, the Lakers just haven't made. I mean, they're going to be able to do things that no other franchise is going to be able to do because they gave up next to no long-term assets for a top five player in the NBA. It's amazing. I don't know how they did it. But I think the Spurs become, like, pretty dangerous as a play-in team. But otherwise, as it stands right now, I don't think anything changes for this season, really.
The only thing I'll add, I think the, and we didn't really touch on this, but I think from a capstone perspective, I think for the Spurs for that 1-3-2-year time horizon, it's kind of all sunshine and rainbows. It's very exciting. I do wonder in year 3 of a Fox extension, are we looking at it retrospectively saying the Spurs moved too quickly, right? Is that the right type of partner? And level of partner that we want to kind of build kind of a two foundational piece around 1B. And maybe it was kind of, the opportunity was there and they jumped on it and we look back and it was the right decision. Or do we look back and say, hey, they committed too early. They should have waited for Cade to become frustrated and to become available for, you know, the next iteration, right, as it related to at some point guard that was at a different level of De'Aaron Fox. Who knows, right? But I wonder if that 5-year time horizon, we circle back to this specific trade deadline and look at the Spurs moving too quickly. And then, I think the 1-3-year time horizon, I think it'll be really interesting if the Lakers can win one with LeBron and Luka together. I wonder what that does for LeBron's legacy, if you will, right? I think that's the other point of this that's really interesting. If they are able to cobble it together and Luka can come back and be healthy, like it does vault them into a championship contender, right? Just because you have Luka. And I think if LeBron can help usher in a championship for the next generation of superstars, that is like a very interesting career arc, right? Of being able to be a part of all of those different. So those are kind of the capstone pieces that I'll want to continue to monitor as we move forward. Awesome. Well, listen, a lot to continue to decompress. Was fun to get on and just chat through it with y'all. And thank you to everybody for listening. We'd love to hear from our fans. So gonna get the socials going this week for y'all to be able to listen and interact with us. So excited to get those up and running, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Have a great rest of the week and enjoy your trade deadline celebrations.